The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS. By the way, that would be Mike's nightmare for us to just turn this entire pod because I came with so bad into turning it, talking about which Britpop band.
We're versus Oasis. Let's go.
And brought to you by Body Bio. Get 20% off any Body Bio order at bodybio.com with promo code Mike's Tummy. Briggs Auction, the official auction of the process at briggsauction.com. And Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, we are back after the All-Star break, and the Sixers are just like sort of right where we left them as they lose to the Milwaukee Bucks in really just like boring fashion, I think is the best way that you can explain it. But Doc Rivers did come back and say some bullshit, so we'll talk about that. We'll also do a sort of recap of Bell Night because it's going to be more fun to talk about than, of course, the Sixers game. And I will, for one time and one time only, and this will be the first and last time I address any WIP controversy on this podcast, but I will address the AJ Brown controversy on this podcast. I did mention Kinetic Skateboarding. One of the things I think I never bring up when I talk about Kinetic, and AU is filling in for Mike here, so, and AU's stuff is always brought to us by Kinetic. One thing that I never bring up is how cool Kinetic's like own brand stuff is on the website. I think of all the stuff I've purchased on their site, and I have actually got a Guns N' Roses, a Primitive / Guns N' Roses collabo from their site. But of all the stuff I've gotten, which has been sneakers, hoodies, t-shirts, all that kind of stuff, the stuff that I buy the most is the Kinetic brand stuff because I feel like the logo is cool. Like it's always designed really cool. Two items right now on the Kinetic site you should look for. One, the beanies, the winter beanies are awesome. Three different colors, black, looks like a purplish and like a khaki-ish, a dark khaki. But I do have two Kinetic beanies for the winter, and they are excellent hats. So I would recommend that, high quality. And then the Kinetic long sleeve, the Kinetic discount sneakers long sleeve. It's got a New Balance high top on there. Every like piece of Kinetic brand stuff I get from them is super high quality and I wear all the time, but I've become a long sleeve tee guy, and the Kinetic discount sneakers tee is a great one. So go to kineticskateboarding.com, use code Dave Silver. If it's your first order, you get 9.1% off it. Without any further ado, I think that's all I had to do before the pod. Yep, Amos and the chef. There we go. I was going to see if the bell was going to be the intro. I was like, the fuck, Meek Mill's ringing the bell in the intro. Why are we not there? There we go. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who has a chance to get some backup 5 minutes in front of Mo Bamba. That is one Andrew Unterberger. Welcome, AU.
I'm not taking him from Paul Reed. I mean, he can play the four and I'll play the five, I guess. But I'm not taking minutes away from B-Ball Paul.
Well, B-Ball Paul's the starting center right now. I'm talking about not when Embiid comes back, but I'm talking about right now. Right now.
I'll take 4 minutes in the second quarter and four in the fourth. The rest are all Paul's. So.
Are we going to do this B-Ball Paul thing the entire time?
Just that.
AU's new bit is that he is the staunchest defender of any and all B-Ball Paul, which I enjoy. And it's a good thing to talk about today. So I think do we talk about the game first or Doc being back and Doc's like comments before the game? Your choice, AU.
I'm a little out on the Doc stuff, so let's get that out of the way early, I would say.
You're out on the Doc stuff. Wow.
I feel like it's getting to be enough. Like I've definitely now like an adapter of the theory that Doc became a coach again, mostly so he would have more opportunities to talk in public. Mm-hmm. That seems to be kind of his passion in life now, more so than actually coaching the basketball games. So like, I don't want to indulge him more than we absolutely have to. So let's just do it first and get out of the way.
Yeah. Well, I actually enjoy indulging him. The people who I hate the most, when they give me content, I will lean right into it. So Dan Ellinger, the Danny, who might have no more than 4 days left on the Ricky staff, actually, if we don't get that.
I was talking to him the other day, by the way. He's pretty confident. He thinks he's going to do it, and he thinks he's going to get it done.
Well, we got to get the video. He has to hit the free throws, and the video, we have to find out, is not doctored, which we'll put through a number of different tests. But so before, this is Doc's first game back as after being hired by the Bucks, of course, and Dan Ellinger was there at the pregame presser. And I just thought there were a couple of segments where he was talking about his run as Sixers coach that were particularly annoying. So, CJ, why don't you hit the first one?
I don't know. I honestly haven't thought about it much since.
Pause it for a second. So, by the way, he's talking when the thing that he said he hasn't thought about much is them losing to the Celtics, right? I think that was the question.
Yeah, I think maybe game six specifically, but yeah definitely that series loss.
So anyway, continue.
Maybe they were better. Could that be a possibility? You know, that's probably why you picked them, right? You know, so that's one reason. I thought game six was our game. I didn't think I didn't think Joel got the ball enough. And trust me, it was for him to get it. And he didn't get it. I don't know how healthy he was. So, but as I've told you guys 100 times, you put yourself in those positions, and winning is hard. And you're going to win some of them. You're not going to win some of them. And you just keep going. You know. I think that's the answer.
So okay, a couple of things. First of all, has no idea if Embiid was healthy or not, but was the head coach of the basketball team. One. Manages to throw Embiid under the bus by saying the ball was there for him to get it and he didn't go get it for whatever reason. And smugly says, well, they're favored, right? That's why he picked them, right? I mean, he threw somebody under the bus. He made an excuse and he acted like a dickhead all in one 60-second clip.
The
what a homecoming.
Hat trick. Yeah. I mean, he's not really wrong about any of it, which is the weird thing. Like no, Joel wasn't healthy. No, he didn't get the ball enough in game six. I guess you would say that's probably Joel's fault for not going and getting the ball, and it might have to do with him not being healthy. And they were the better team in that series. They should have lost that series. And you know, he has in one of his related clips, they ask him, or he asks the reporters in attendance, like, who picked the Sixers, and nobody raises their hand. And that's true. Nobody did pick the Sixers. I didn't pick the Sixers in that series. But he's being a dick about it. He's sort of shunting off responsibility to everybody else but himself. He's kind of sort of quoting James Harden with the whole the ball didn't find Joel thing. It's tough. It's tough stuff.
Well,
but we keep asking him.
One thing I think we need to do, because it'll make the list a little bit bigger because we can add this one, is Doc is obviously famous for blowing more 3-1 leads in the playoffs than any coach in NBA history. Would you ask Doc that question? But he did blow a 3-2 lead in this one too, which he should get credit for. Why don't we do the second one, the second quote?
I believe in what I do. I'll put it that way. Going into the series last year, if I asked you guys to have a show of hands, who picked the Sixers? That's the point. So, yet we had them down 3-2 and had a chance. The game we should have won was game six. Game sevens are tough everywhere. But, you know, we did something to get there. And it just tells you how close we were. And so, you know, I look back on that and think, I don't, you know, Joel wasn't 100% last year. So, you know, things happen and you just live with it. If you,
God, he's just brutal. That's all I want to say is he's a brutal man.
He sounds like me talking about this series. Like the head coach shouldn't sound like me. Like, well, like things could have been a little different if this and that. And that's not a good look.
Yeah. It's Mike's. They hit shots. They hit when the other team's going to hit shots. There's not much you can do. So there you go. So I think my headline from this game, and I've said it a number of times, and now that basically everybody's back besides Joel, like that excuse is now gone. I'm not complaining about how bad they are without Joel. I understand it. It is what it is. I think it's all, I think every one of these games is a reminder about how good he is because of how good we think the roster is when he's playing. And then when he's gone, they look brutal. This team's just going to be a really difficult watch without him. And like we just have to cross our fingers that they stay out of the play-in. Like I just don't want any part of that. We were talking before at the All-Star break about how many of the final, I think it was 32 games or 28 games they had left. 500 seems like a tough putt to me, you know, especially looking at the schedule the rest of the year. They're just going to be a rough watch. I don't even know what to say. They're going to be a rough watch.
The hard thing is, and the thing that I think is really unfortunate about the timing of Joel's injury is that we basically like did the season in the wrong order. We should have had our hard games while he was playing and now be able, because I think this team is good enough to like beat the Charlottes and Detroits of the world fairly regularly. Like even without Joel, I think they should be able to do that, but it doesn't matter. Cause we're not, we already blew through all those games. We blew through all those games when Joel was putting up 30 and 10 every night. And now we have to play actual good teams. And this team can't compete against actual good teams without Joel. But like I was looking it up and they only played, like so far without Joel, they've only played six games against teams that are out of the playoffs now. And they have a couple coming up, but it's been a lot more of these like Boston, New York, Milwaukee type runs. And I think that makes us look even worse than we actually are without Joel. And this is all excuses, obviously, but like you look at the roster now and as we got Lowry, Oubre and Melton. Now none of those guys have to start anymore. They're all coming off the bench. I looked at that. I was like, man, like we're like an all-star team again. Like this is incredible. Like compared to when we were playing, you know, Jaden Springer and KJ Martin 25 minutes a night, it feels like this is like a pretty loaded roster. But yeah, they're good enough to beat bad teams and they can hang with pretty good teams, but they just get outclassed by actual elite teams, actual contending teams.
Well, we didn't talk about, we'll talk about the what's it called? The Bell stuff later, and we didn't talk about the Knicks game very much, if at all, at the night of the Bell pod, but they're missing three starters too. And they're not missing their best player, but they also got basically run off a court by a team missing three starters too. I would love to, I guess we'll talk to him afterwards, even though we're due for a Daryl visit. Daryl, if you're out there, we're due for a Daryl visit. I just wonder, maybe I don't watch enough games of teams without their best player in the NBA currently, but our team feels particularly bad without Embiid.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I would love to get like a more decent level of competition that we're not playing a top six team every night or top three team in our kind. You're right, the Knicks were compromised, but they were still clearly much better than we were without Embiid. But I feel like if we were playing, you know, more of the Orlandos and Atlantas, we would seem like a pretty good team, even if we didn't win every one of those games. I think we would at least be on their level. But I looked at Orlando's schedule coming up. They've got like, it's like at Atlanta, at home for Brooklyn, at home for Detroit, at home for Charlotte. It's going to be really tough to stay ahead of those guys in the standings because they've got their soft part coming up and we're only really getting into the thick of ours.
To look into this game, just, I guess, this specific game, the first of all, it has to be a headline. I don't ever do it with the headline when Mike is here, but Tobias Harris is worse than normal. He's in a bad Tobias stretch, which you have documented before, but he also looks like there's something wrong with his brain.
The decision making is not there, and I think he finally did start to get booed tonight. I heard a little bit of that on the broadcast. Yeah, I'm surprised it took this long. I mean, he has been just absolutely brutal on offense. A lot of like, you know, 5 foot hook shots that carom off the far end of the rim, and dropping balls out of bounds and just kind of fumbling and like passes that he has to be a connector for. It's been, and I think he has like 1 3 made over the last three games. He's like 1 of 7 total, something like that. I think 3 combined free throw attempts over those three games. He's adding nothing really on that end. I do have to give him a little bit of credit. I thought he played good defense on Giannis today. I don't know how you feel about that. And maybe it didn't really matter, but they contained him for the first half.
I don't care. Well, I'm so sick of hearing about Tobias's. I'm not dismissing what you're saying, but like, I don't even know what the point is talking about it anymore. I still can't believe he played the whole fucking contract here. And I truly believe people talk about reasonable contract for him. I don't care what he gets paid. That guy can't start on a championship team. He is a fine bench player, but that guy, because of the way that he plays, I just can't see him as a starter on a championship team. I so don't.
We've talked a lot about like bringing him off the bench and, oh, that'll never happen. Why not? Is there an actual good reason why not? Like, it seems like this team.
Now there's no reason now. I think there was a reason last year. I don't think there's a reason now.
Why would you not at least try Maxi, Hield, and Melton with Batum and Paul Reed in the starting lineup? There's no, like, why would Nick Nurse not do six games of that? Is there any good reason?
I can't think of a good reason. No. I actually think it would help. It would have give let Toby play Toby ball off of the bench. And now that means that you're going to have Oubre and Toby both wanting to play Toby ball off of the bench, which I think that's like Ouch. Sort of a rough look as
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
but
that's not so good.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by what's first on Body Bio. Love Body Bio. I was telling I still go to physical therapy for my hip, go once or twice a week. And I was telling my PT guy about Elite and what a difference it made for me because I was telling him about, so I used to have cramping problems in my calves, like sort of in my feet and in my hamstrings. And the other rare cramp that I used to get was when I would bend over, I would get a cramp in my abdomen, like in my abs, which is the absolute worst cramp to get because it is impossible to stretch out. You almost have to lay on your back. It's terrible. Elite, actually, which I have over here, Elite right here, helps get rid of that cramping. What Elite is, it helps you be correctly hydrated. It is pure electrolytes. We love Body Bio because everything they have, all of their products, which they're constantly updating. We love that they're local. We love that they're family owned and operated, all those things. But they explain what the difference is between their product and competing products. And when you hear about electrolytes, you're normally hearing about sports drinks, which have sugar or artificial colors or artificial flavors or all those things. Or if it doesn't have sugar, it has the fake sugar in there. Elite doesn't have any of that stuff. Nothing. It is pure electrolyte. So you take a little bit of it, put it in your drink in the morning, like in some water, whatever, put it in juice, put it in at night, and it keeps your body perfectly balanced with hydration. Hydration is not just about water. You have to drink enough water, but you need the right amount of electrolytes, and Elite does it. I'm telling you, just try it. I think this bottle is like $8 or something, and then when you get that 20% off, that's $2 off it. Just try it. This bottle would last, I don't know, month, something like that, month and a half. Give it a try. Go to bodybio.com. Try Elite. Just try it. Use code MikesTummy, MikesTummy, for 20% off anything. While you're there, you can look at butyrate. You can look at liposomal vitamin C. You can look at Calm, all those things we've talked about. My favorite is Elite. Go to bodybio.com. Use code MikesTummy for 20% off. Body Bio. We love you. Body Bio. The other thing I thought was that has... while they're playing poorly is just a reminder is like, he was on the podcast. Actually, both guys were on the podcast. He was on the podcast this season. I personally, and it seems like Nick Nurse is very close to it as well, as like Nick Batum is now the backup center, is Mo Bamba is not like playable right now. And I know he's going through like a knee thing, but like the knee thing shouldn't be part of why literally every rebound gets wrestled from you. It looks like he can't bend over.
Yeah,
when there's a ball,
that's like a team wide condition. The lack of bending over, like that. Tobias struggles. Buddy Hield, actually, I've noticed he's also been diagnosed with the inability to bend over. So this might be something in the practice facility. I don't know, maybe they're not doing the right stretches there or something. But he's not the only one.
It was a weird B-ball Paul game in that. I understand that he is more capable. So we have B-ball Paul's guy on right now. I understand that he is more capable an offensive player than probably what he was doing last year when he was just setting screen roll, screen roll, screen roll, screen roll. But he does the thing that they need from him is he just does not seem to have a total handle on when to shoot it and when not. And he's a reasonably capable mid-range shooter and a reasonably capable three-point shooter, but he takes too many of those shots too early in the clock. And I'm fine with him getting 35 minutes in these games. And it does seem like over the last few games, he has upped the energy quotient, especially rebounding, which they need from him, because without Embiid, who, by the way, is of only a fair rebounder anyway, but without Embiid, they're just an atrocious rebounding team. Feels like he's gotten better at it. He just, the decision-making on offense, I think, needs to get like 20% better.
I understand that it looks bad when the mid-range shot doesn't go in. I understand it looks really bad when the three-pointer doesn't go in. Chances are, if he's getting that shot on the possession, that's the best shot they're going to get on that possession. I don't know. Hubie was chewing him out for shooting a corner three with 6 seconds left on the shot clock. It's like, what do you think? He's going to pump and drive and then set another part of the play into motion? Like, I don't know what people expect when Paul gets put in those positions. I mean, it'd be nice if the shot went in more often. He hit, like, I think one mid-ranger and one three this game, so it wasn't an atrocity.
What if he, can I ask you something? What if he just, they're leaving him alone every time that happens? I'm not talking about the corner three, but the mid-rangers. What if he, Ricky, canceled the fourth it and just drove directly to the rim hard rather than dipsy doing and Euro-stepping his way to it and rather than shooting that shot? Like, what if he went hard to the rim?
Sure. But I mean, you saw like how good their rim protection was in this game. Like, how did that work out for Kelly Oubre every time he tried to dunk it? Like, I mean, he also just whiffed on a couple of them. But like, they weren't getting anything at the rim this game. It was, you know, Brook Lopez, greatest player in the world. Him and Derek White, they would go 82-0 if they were on the team together. It just wasn't going to happen, I don't think. I mean, and B-ball, while like athletic, is not necessarily that explosive towards the rim. Like he doesn't really have that like. That power, I don't think.
No, he doesn't. He looks like a guy that would be more athletic than he actually is.
Yeah. Physically. There's also a problem with his rebounding, too. Look, he didn't obviously did not play perfect in this game. That fifth foul on Giannis, that and one, was atrocious. That was like as benchable a play as he's made in this stretch without Joel. But I didn't have a problem with the shots. Like, those shots, they're open shots. He's capable of making it. The offense was not working on those possessions. He's got to shoot it sometimes. That's fine. Like, it drives me nuts that everyone, like, everyone sees that as like the summation of the Paul Reed experience. Whenever he misses a jumper, it's like anybody else is allowed to miss a jumper. Kelly Oubre's got, you know, he's allowed to miss 10 in a row sometimes, and it's not that big a deal. And he takes them even earlier in the shot clock than B-ball does. But anytime B-ball misses one, it's a crisis. It's a verdict on him as a player. And that's
I don't know, man. He was 6 of 13.
That's fine.
No, it's not.
It's not great.
He's 6'10". He's a center. He shouldn't be. It's not okay. Now, Tobias.
He's not that much taller than Tobias, who was, what, like 3 of 13?
Yeah, but they're different players. And I just eviscerated Tobias, and you're not defending Tobias. You're defending Paul Reed. I don't know.
That's fair.
Yeah. Paul Reed games have to be, if he's going to shoot 13 times, they have to be 10 of 13.
I'm more okay with him doing the 6 of 13 if he's also doing other stuff on defense, if he's getting the loose balls, if he's going for block shots. Like he was active in this game. Sometimes you got to feed the beast a little bit. Like it's like you got to keep people happy, man. You got to let him do his weird shit sometimes. It's going to come back and bite you. But like there was that one sequence where he had the made three and then he blocked Lillard at the other end and then he turned the ball over at the other end. That's going to happen. You get 2 out of 3 with B-ball. That's a good series of possessions right there. You got to take the bad with the good. Play him 35 minutes a night when you don't have any other playable centers. It's okay. I mean, if he fouls out, he fouls out. But we talk a little bit more about Mo Bamba. Like, he was a sitting duck on all of those Giannis drives. I've never seen anything quite so helpless, especially for a guy who actually has like a pretty good size advantage on Giannis, which is something like 10 players in the league can say. And it didn't matter at all because he's fucking stiff as a board out there.
It was Buddy Hield's worst game as a Sixer, I think. He looked particularly slow. And actually, I mentioned this. He passed up on a couple of threes. He doesn't have like, he doesn't just shoot real quick, sort of the way that you would expect him to. This is the first time that I'm actually concentrating watching him. But like, it seems like he needs a tick more time than I would expect that he would need before he would fire away. Do you feel that when you're watching him?
Yeah, I felt that really from the first game even. I think everything with him is a little bit slower than I expected. He doesn't have a good first step. He doesn't hoist particularly like quickly or even like I expected him to be a little bit more irresponsible with the shooting.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he was sometimes, you know. Like I think actually Melton has a quicker trigger than Hield does, which is weird.
Melton's developed a pretty quick trigger, actually. It's nice having him back, by the way.
So nice having him back. Yeah. Oh, my God, D'Anthony. And like having him coming off the bench, it feels like, okay, like we got something here now. Like we got some players again, but, and we needed him for most of the second half, I think. But yeah, the heel, like everything's just a tick slower than you want. He's in his 30s. It's not like shocking, But yeah, the loose balls. There was one possession that I screenshot at the end of the second quarter where Dame like was driving and threw a pass back to nobody, and it landed right between, I think, Heald and maybe Ricky Council, and they both just kind of watched it go by and went straight to Jay Crowder, kicked it to Malik Beasley for a wide open three. And there were like eight possessions like that in the game, and Heald was at the center of a lot of them. He's just not very fast to the ball.
I was actually relieved to see Campaign only play 8 minutes after the game he had against Cleveland, because I knew we were due for a Campaign stinker. When he makes a bunch of those shots, it's like you're setting yourself up. So I was happy to see him only play 8 minutes, but the another 29 minute game from Oubre, the only redeeming thing about Oubre is that he does go hard to the rim. He dunks hard. He's the hardest dunker the Sixers have had since KJ McDaniels. I don't think that there's anybody else in there who I think you would put that. He tries to dunk on people. It's cool, but he's a rough watch at 30 minutes a game.
Yeah. And the two missed dunks in this one, it's like, yeah, we can't even dunk the ball. What are we doing here? But yeah, there was like a rise up three that he had in the fourth, I think, when they were on a run, and all of a sudden he pulls up from three with like 15 on the shot clock, and he misses it, of course, and that just kind of killed the entire momentum. I'm very much looking forward to Kelly Oubre going back to like a 20 minute a game guy, if that's even an option at this point.
Before we get it, do you have anything else in this game? I wanted to show a quick video. Did you have anything else on your list?
Yeah, probably. But can we talk about like the Sixers inbounding a little bit?
Sure.
And like how, like every time they had to inbound the ball in this game, it was like a five-act Greek tragedy.
Well, you can't talk about that without talking about the amazing moment at the end of the Cavs game where Nick Batum had not played at all the entire game. Nick Nurse saw Tobias Harris about to inbound the ball, immediately sends Batum into the game to inbound it. He successfully inbounds it. Uh-oh, my camera's gone. Oh, Jesus Christmas. What a friggin'. You can hear me still, right?
I can't hear you. Yeah, you're
all right. Maybe I'll have to move to the FaceTime camera. Hang on.
All right, well, you work on that. Yeah, I think, I mean, that play was obviously amazing, and kudos to Dan Olinger for pointing it out and clipping it for everybody to see. I think maybe the solution is just get Batum to inbound every single inbounds pass for the team. You know, if he's on the court, fine, easy fix there. If he's not on the court, maybe just sub him in for that one possession, and just get it so that we never again have to inbound the ball anybody else on the team aside from Nicholas Batum. It seems like no one else on the team can be trusted with that responsibility, especially in the final minute of the game, where you just sort of take it for granted at this point that there's going to be at least one catastrophic turnover, and you just hope it's only the one. Because you can usually survive one if they're up eight with like 30 seconds to go. It's like, yeah, you just give them the ball back, they score an easy layup, fine. Just keep it to the one, and I think we're in good shape. But yeah, just use your timeouts wisely. Get Batum back in there whenever you have to end down the ball out of a broken possession or whatever. And maybe we cut those out entirely. Who knows?
Spent $800 on a camera, died in the middle of the friggin' podcast. What are we doing here? What are we doing? We got to go back to the bad equipment. I think that's the only way to do it, is to go back.
This is all part and parcel of the Ricky just getting too corporate,
yep,
too legit. You guys are ringing the bell. You're hiring a fucking editor-in-chief. This is going to like the third act of the Behind the Music here. It's all bad stuff.
Yeah, we jumped the shark years ago. I think we circled back, found the shark, and jumped over him again. So
keep on jumping it, baby.
I think we need to show this amazing moment that happened, and this is worth watching. If you're just listening to the pod, it's worth checking it out on Spotify or on YouTube first to see that I had to change cameras, and it doesn't look bad actually. So Arthur, Embiid's son, was at the game. And there was a short video. I'm sure Sixers social did not think of this when they posted this video, but Arthur clearly does not dap up Tobias Harris when Tobias Harris comes over to do it. So here it is. Embiid is holding. Oh, nope. Does dap up Maxi. Give no problem whatsoever. Does Kyle Lowry? I didn't see. So let's watch again. Picks up Arthur. Nope. Any comment here, AU?
Kids just love Maxi. Like he really is one of their own. Yeah, Tobias, I can't judge too harshly. Kids hate me too. I can never get the dab. And that's always my go-to move too, is like I never have anything to say to baby, so I just go in for the fist bump. And I very rarely get to connect on that.
Before we get to AJ Brown and Ricky bell ringing and AU, the editor-in-chief, which AU mentioned, AU is now editor-in-chief of the rights to Ricky Sanchez. We'll explain what that means in just a bit as we figure it out as it goes on.
I can't wait to hear what the explanation is. I'm curious myself.
I don't know. So we have a new piece of merch, and it is an old piece of merch that we redid. Our most famous shirt of all time, or our most sold shirt of all time, I would say, is the one from the lottery party with the names on the back. With the names on the back, and it was at the time of... It was years ago when we did it, so there were fewer names. So we felt like we needed an update of the shirt, so it is updated with every name on the back, and we redid the front art too. It sort of looks like the Ricky University is the way I was calling it, with a big Say the Name and the logo, and Say the Name in Latin underneath in the logo, and then all of the names. We're going to wait before we print them, I think about 2 weeks. We're just going to March 1st. If a player is cut by March 1st, then they can sign with a new team and be on a playoff roster. So we're going to wait till a little bit after that to see if the Sixers with one of their open roster spots does it. But thanks to Scheib Sports, Scheib Vintage Sports. If you go to scheibvintagesports.com, if you want to buy the t-shirt, it's for sale now. We'll put it in the description. If you go to our website, it's there too. But Scheib Vintage Sports is selling the shirt now, and they have other Sixers, Eagles, Philly stuff. The shipping is only $3.99, which is awesome. The shipping is free if you spend $65 or more. You can get all those team t-shirts at Scheib, but you can also get the new Ricky names on the back shirt with 4,000 names. I think we still have to add Baisley, and then we'll see if there's any more. But we're up through Lowry. We have to add Baisley. So, and thanks to Dan Olinger, who asked for a free one because he compiled the list of players.
Is he getting it?
I'll think about it. Well, if he's not part of the Ricky by the time they get printed, the answer is definitely no. We'll see how many free throws he makes. But I'm really happy with this shirt. It's Heather Gray. I don't think we've done a gray shirt ever before. Maybe the Hinky one, of the stained glass Hinky one, was gray at one point, but it's a good t-shirt. Good blank too. Gildan G640, which is a shirt that I like a lot. So they got any comments on the shirt, AU?
I think we got to find the guy, like the guy who like models the t-shirt, and maybe make him a guest at the next Ricky Live Pod or something.
Simply no idea who that guy is.
Yeah, he can come out, like do a little runway action with it maybe. Really,
he's so fit. Did you see how fit he was?
Good looking guy. Yeah.
So we got this voicemail to 833 Lickface. See if it works.
Mike, CJ, Chris from Dallas calling. Not first time, very long time. Question for you, Spike. You were in the news a lot this week, man. Like, I'm watching the game. You pop up on the TV. I see you guys ring the bell. Congratulations. We know that's huge. The Ricky community supports it. Same night, I see what you said about, like, AJ Brown on Instagram and then him commenting on it. And then the next thing you know, he's calling it a WIP. And I felt like he put WIP in their place in a way. And I assume you may disagree with this. But he came on and he kind of checked your co-host. I know you were not there to defend what you had said, but he had brought it up directly. And I'm just curious what your take on AJ's call was, because I felt that as an Eagles fan, it was very refreshing to hear him call in and be like, I want to be here, but I'm pissed off at the media because of X, Y, and Z. I don't feel like she has the things that he has that you had mentioned, because the media is the media. Like, you know, sports is sports. People are going to love him. He's a beast. Like, he's going to get paid. I'm curious how you explain what you had said in response to AJ, and I'm sure you're getting a million calls just like this one, but you know, man, let's hear what you have to say, because, you know, we love you guys and you've been called out, Spike. So what is your rebuttal to AJ Brown, or do you just agree with what he said and, you know, want to maybe rephrase what you had said? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but curious for what your take is. Thanks for the pod, guys. Y'all are the best. Have a good night.
So the first thing I'll say is I appreciate the reasonable way the question was asked, and not a DM telling me that you hope I die, which I've experienced as well. So I think the headline of this is the clip that he was mad about, I was not talking about AJ Brown in. Now, I was talking about my own dad. I was talking about Howard Eskin in that clip. You can ask a question.
We were talking about a little bit because I only sort of know what's going on in this controversy. I saw you tweeting the sort of same thing you're saying now, but I don't understand what the original thing was.
Yeah. So what's funny is on the day of the bell ringing, I went and did like an hour and a half or something with Jack and Ike in the studio, the show that I'm joining eventually. Then I went there, whatever. I leave stateside. I look at my phone and I see the Darius Slay tweet. And then I see the AJ Brown one. And I actually didn't even watch the video that they were talking about because I assumed I knew what it was, but I didn't know. And it literally wasn't until after AJ Brown called that Andrew Porter, who works for WIP, had mentioned what was on the clip and he had realized what the disconnect was. So when I went there, when I was talking about two specific things. I was talking about an AJ Brown tweet, which he denied was him, but I'm sorry, I don't believe it. Like, your account was hacked and the person who hacked it was just saying exactly the same things that you believe. I don't know, it sounds like a good hacker. Anyway, so he had tweeted about the Philly media isn't that supportive. They say they're supportive, but they're not, yada, yada, yada. I forget what the exact tweet was. And my father, the same day, had also been critical of media in the same way. So I was talking about both of them in and out, separate things. The clip that went viral, and I don't think it's there anymore. The clip that went viral that he was mad at is when I said, every car that you have, your house, every Rolex that you own is because of WIP. That was not about AJ Brown. And it makes a lot more sense if you go back and you listen to the podcast, you can hear it. I was absolutely critical of AJ Brown, 100%, for sure. But I was not saying that all the money he earns is because of WIP. That is ridiculous. And also makes a lot more sense when you think about Howard Eskin, whose entire career is like, obviously he earned it, but without WIP, that doesn't happen. And my point about my father was like, you are forgetting where you came from. You should not be critical of the media. And in specific, the AJ Brown thing, I actually don't think they've been particularly unfair. My point about AJ Brown specifically, and so that's the big issue there, is that the thing that he saw, if he believed it was about him, which I understood why he did, given the context, and without the rest of the context, I don't expect AJ Brown to actually give me the benefit of the doubt. We don't know each other and go back and listen to the podcast. I understand why he would be mad, but I was not talking about him. So the entire like dust up in that specific case was not about what I said. So it was about what I said, but was not about him. Mm. My point about him blaming the media, and by the way, I guess a more general sense, part of why sports are big is because of the media. Now, I am not saying that sports are big because of the media, but the amplification and the all day talking about all of these things all the time certainly generate revenue for the content outlets. But the teams and the organizations and the leagues want this to happen because it does generate revenue. But that was not my point. My point to him is that it is not a fan or the media's job to be positive and support you no matter what. That's not what the job is. It's not what the media's job is, and it's not what if a fan wants to do that, that's fine. But, and I understand why athletes, and the Eagles had a legendary collapse. He specifically did not talk for several weeks, and when he did, was ambiguous about what he said. He is still clearly upset with Jalen Hurts. Even in that interview, he clearly is. And he may say, I don't want to comment on my relationship with Jalen Hurts, which is fine. But the only reason I know about why he has a good relationship with Jalen Hurts is because they shared a FaceTime video of each other when AJ Brown got traded to the Eagles, talking about how much they liked each other and how excited they were to play with one another. I did not hack into Jalen Brown's iPhone or AJ Brown's iPhone and get that FaceTime video. They put it on the internet, which was amplified by the media, which nobody had any problem with. So like my point about Philadelphia is that, and the media and the fans as well, is that it is amazing when you are winning and it sucks when you are losing. But there is no better place to be when you are winning. When they were good and when they were going to the Super Bowl, A.J. Brown was not complaining about the media. There were no complaints about the media at any point because everything is lining up. And it's nice when everything lines up, when everything's good. But when everything goes bad, you know, the difference between a player's perspective on a bad game and a bad season is different than a fan's. The fan can't understand why the player isn't miserable after losing every game. And the player can't understand why the fan is so miserable after losing. And I think of it this way. It is one person's job. It's another person's entertainment. But if a player went to a movie or went to a dinner and the movie fucking sucked or the dinner was terrible, that is your free time and your extra money. And I would not be surprised if they complained about either one of them. The fan is spending their free time and their money on the games. When the games are bad, it's a big fucking waste and it sucks. And it sucks in a different way than when you're making a bunch of money to play it. Now, they've earned that right to make that bunch of money and handle it in any way that they want. And I wish the fans would understand better why they're not miserable after every game. All that said, like, I do not blame the Philly media for anything that happened with the Eagles. The Eagles collapsed. If they hadn't collapsed, they wouldn't have fired their coordinators. And they, no one still to this moment, no one has explained why it has been so bad. So that's it. Like, I just don't buy the his specific point where you guys are not really about Philly because you don't support us. No, like, this is not team media. It's when you're bad, you're going to eat shit. And when you're good, we're going to celebrate you like you've saved the city and cured cancer. So that's just sort of like the way it is. But all that said, I am sorry that he took the words that I said about Howard and thought they were about him. That would obviously be ridiculous what I said. But I do not take back any of the other things I said about him and their attitude toward media and that team and how bad that team was.
Yeah, I'm not really going to have a ton to offer here because I don't do Eagles drama. I get enough of it from the Sixers and from a lesser extent the Phillies. I sort of tune out anything sure. That doesn't happen that isn't on those 3 hours on Sunday. I've listened to you and Mike do your A.J. Brown arguments. Oftentimes, I think you're both right and you're both wrong. In terms of just player-media interactions, yeah, I mean, I sympathize on both sides. Like, it's there's always a disconnect because a lot of what you were saying about how fans and media and athletes all view winning and losing through a different lens, and it's kind of hard to find common ground sometimes. I think you are right that your radio station is not responsible for the Eagles' collapse. I think you would love it if your radio station was that powerful. But
because then, you know, we would just make sure they never collapsed.
Well, I think you'd be more popular if that was the case. If you had that power and you also used it for good instead of evil, I think that would be great. But yeah, I don't think you probably do quite have that responsibility. And I hope that AJ Brown is on the Eagles next season, making dope catches and not yelling at people on the sidelines. I think that would be great for everybody.
He's debatably the best. He got compared to T.O. and I understand why, right? Like, if you're in this city and you remember it, you know, Donovan was a guy with a personality that didn't necessarily line up with either the fans or the rest of his teammates all the time. Terrell Owens was the best player, the best receiver in the NFL, and they had a clash and it became public. And I can understand why AJ Brown says, I'm not Terrell Owens, but if you are a Philadelphia fan who lived through that, having that feeling is reasonable. But AJ Brown is debatably the best receiver in the NFL. I wish he and Jalen Hurts would resolve whatever those issues are, even if they're not going to tell us what they are. But I continue to say there is no bigger cheerleader than WIP and the Philadelphia media when the team is good. They get wrapped up in it too. It's good for business. Everybody thinks it's good for business for WIP because we can yell and scream when things are bad. More people listen when the team's good. That is a fact. So that's it. But headline being the clip was not about him, which is clear when you listen to the podcast.
So. Do you think AJ Brown has gotten wind of that being the case, or do you think he's still under the misconception that it was you talking about him?
Don't know. Hope he does. Whatever. What I've noticed about, like, the rage machine of Twitter is, like, people don't care whether that's what I was talking about or not. Like some people said, what was it? Oh, well, you would say that now. It's like, no, I mean, it's recorded. There's a digital version of it. It's history. People just want to be mad, want to get like likes. I can understand AJ Brown seeing that and saying, what the fuck? Like WIP is not the reason that I have what I have, but it is the reason my dad has what he has. So that is. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Briggs Auction, the official auction of The Process. Of course, we have the CJ item of the week, which is a chair, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Now, this auction closes on March 1st. This is the Discovery auction. So there's the estate auctions, the Discovery auctions. I sort of like the Discovery auctions a little bit better because they're a little bit more random. But CJ, tell us about this chair, which I would actually love this chair.
Yeah, so I think at this point, most people know that I'm a sucker for seemingly nice furniture that may need a little like work on. Mm-hmm. This, like my idea with this, and I'm going to start off by saying I'm probably not going to get this. I don't have the space for it. But my ideal project with this is to, you know, get the stuff to rub the wood with and make it shiny and look nice and like spend a few weeks fixing it up, make it look good. I mean, it already looks fine. It looks, you know, like a nice older chair. But if you put the effort into this and really added some character to it, I think it could be great.
That is a great chair. What's the title? I can't see it because I'm on my little screen.
Mission Style Oak Recliner. Yeah. Another thing, whenever a chair or piece of furniture says made by a name, made by Sam Moore, I don't know who Sam Moore is, but that makes me think that this chair is very nice.
Yes,
so
it is.
I'm going to want it because of that.
I've always wanted a recliner. Like we had one at my parents' house when I was younger. I would love to have a recliner, sit back in and watch TV. Briggs Auction, the official auction of The Process. Four-generation family-owned and operated auction house in Garnet Valley, PA. Delco. Shout out to Steve from Briggs Auction, who did not make the stateside party after the bell ringing game, but was at the bell ringing game with amazing seats, may I add. I guess auction business is paying quite well. We love Briggs Auction because of the different stuff you can get, the one-of-a-kind stuff. In this auction that goes off on March 1st, they just did a Star Trek auction. There's a bunch of leftover stuff in this auction that closes on March 1st, Star Trek memorabilia. But you just go, this is the way that I handle a Briggs auction. I go there, I go to the different sections. I personally go to art, I go to collectibles, I go to the electronics, I go to the clothing. Occasionally, I'll go to the furniture. But the amazing thing is that there are items here that bidding starts at $1 for almost all of them. There are items here that you're literally not going to find anywhere else. One of a kind items, furniture, housing, like house, what's it called? Decorations and fucking art, stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else. Go to BriggsAuction.com, download the app in the App Store or Google Play at just Briggs Auction. If you win an auction, like I have several, pickup is easy. Saturday, open pickup all day long, or make an appointment during the week, or they will work with you to find a shipper. And if you have a bunch of stuff, maybe a giant, I mentioned Star Trek, maybe you have a giant Star Wars collection, maybe you have a giant He-Man collection, maybe baseball cards, whatever it is, furniture, whatever it is, send an email to info@BriggsAuction.com, info@BriggsAuction.com, Briggs Auction, the official auction of The Process. All right, the bell ringing. So, first of all, thank you to everybody for the kind words about the bell ringing. Thank you to everyone who came out to stateside afterwards. They had to put a sign on the door that said, we are at capacity, nobody else is allowed in. We actually heard from Ben from Kinetic, who couldn't get in initially. Abby could not get in initially because was so packed in there. Yeah, it was a good feeling because we didn't promote it that hard. We didn't know, you know, what it was going to be. It's Fishtown on a Thursday night. I had only been to that bar once or twice. I didn't even remember the size of it, and we got some private messages from Ricky listeners who could not get in as well. But I, it's just always so heartening to me to see everybody and be around everybody. And we did a very bad podcast for about a half an hour, but hanging out afterwards and getting to, take pictures with everybody and say hi to everybody. And there was one guy that was there from France, was from Philadelphia, moved to France 20 years ago, happened to be in Philly. His sister-in-law, I think, bought tickets to the Sixers game. He did not know we were ringing the bell, obviously. He found out about the thing that night, then immediately has been listening to the pod for like 8 years. So so that was really cool. And of course, having all of Team Ricky there, aside from MOC, shout out MOC, but having all of Team Ricky there was awesome as well.
Did you guys leave Ben and Abby at the door? You just like
No, they came in, but I didn't know they were stuck. I think they talked their way in there. But so stateside was understaffed that night. I think they only had two people working. It was Mike and whoever the bar manager, whoever the bartender was. I did not get her name, but she was great. And then Clement, the CEO, was there as well, but they only had a couple people working. So I think what happened was people walked in and then would get kicked out after they walked in. But I think Ben and Abby talked their way into it. But it was an amazing moment. It was really cool. And I'll say this, Mike isn't on, but I'd like to talk to him about it. It was the happiest I've ever seen Mike.
Wow.
Yeah.
At the actual bell ringing or yes. The whole night?
But the whole night he was so carefree and happy. Normally I it's not that I don't think Mike likes the events. Mike likes the events, but I love the events. Like I love the talking to everybody, blah, blah, blah. I think I love it more than Mike does generally, but I don't know. CJ was there the whole time. CJ, did you notice a happier Mike during the bell ringing time?
Yeah, I felt the whole day was just giddy all around. I often think back to when I first joined and we had pandemic hair Mike. Mm-hmm. And I like that person was a completely different person from what we have now. And that was highlighted ringing the bell.
Yeah.
Because he was just cracking jokes, smiling the whole night. It was great. Aww.
Even with me, you know, we've known each other and worked with each other, and I was not invited to his wedding, as I've mentioned before, but we've known each other for, you know, well over a decade now, and we're not like touchy-feely guys or whatever, but Mike seemed to be generally having fun sitting with, like, he was like, Franklin came over, took the selfie with me and Franklin and him. I got a hug from Mike after the bell ringing. It was a nice night for everybody. Yeah.
I was sitting in the row in front of Alyssa and also Dan and CJ. Oh, love that photo. That's good times there. But yeah, so I was watching you and Mike like sitting courtside, and I turned around to Alyssa and I was like, do you think this is the longest they've ever spent talking to each other?
Yes.
Like it probably was. Right? Or yes. Close
non-podcast, to, like, right? You mean?
Yeah, yes. Non-podcast.
Yes. 100%.
And it was good vibes and not a great time. About waking him up too early or
no.
Okay.
I think there are, this is a deep Ricky thing. I think there are pluses to us not really talking outside of the podcast in that we don't ruin like whatever's happening on the pod. You're getting actual true interaction. There's no, I wish there were more planning into what we talk about and how we react, but we don't. You're getting the real thing. I think that's one of the advantages. Mm-hmm. But like aside from it, we have a good relationship, Mike and I, but as we work together. We've worked together a long time. We're partners in this for sure. I think he is supportive and I am supportive, but yeah, we've never sat together and, you know, talked, and he was so happy to be like when he got the loose ball. It was probably the most excited I've ever seen Mike in his entire life, or it's since I've known him.
I think I was more interested in watching Mike react to what was going on in the game than myself actually watching the game, because he was so animated whenever anything happened in his direction. And I feel like there were a good amount of moments like getting the loose ball where he was very animated.
By the way, he'll deny this forever. He was put on a little bit of a show on the sideline for the certain things.
Hamming it up a little bit.
He knew where we were. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He knew we were caught. We were on camera for sure. So
I would say I listened to the pod. You know, I didn't make it out to stateside, unfortunately, mostly because I had to go back and write about the game. But I did listen to it afterwards, and the good vibes they do come through on the podcast, I think. And especially, I mean, that's always the case at the live events. I think it is sort of the two of you at your best together, but even more so with this one, because you weren't planning a whole bunch of shit alongside it at that point. At that point, it was basically just a victory lap.
Yeah.
So you seem to be having fun and genuinely enjoying each other's company, which is not always the case. So that was great to hear.
And by the way, the other thing I'll say, just because you brought it up, you can't talk to somebody for 3 hours a week about and have different opinions and not have moments where you're like at each other's throats or pissy or don't feel like doing it. Like those, I actually don't think we have more of those moments than anybody else does. I do think that we, because we do it live, we leave them in. And I there's a segment of the Ricky population that really likes that stuff. Sure. So, but I think it's more real and I think it's more interesting when we leave it in there. But there were a couple of things that I wanted to get your take on AU. First of all, we all remember the AI generated image of that Daryl came up with of us being locked out of ringing the bell. I think the amazing thing is if you look at them together, it's kind of accurate.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those like highlights magazine, like spot like the 10 like microscopic differences between the two images things. Yeah, you showed those to a casual fan that they couldn't tell you the difference.
Yeah, that the AI was like pretty close actually. And then of course Daryl responds with the Pam from The Office gif.
A fine job by Daryl.
Yeah, they're the same. Good stuff, that is the first thing. The second thing is, wait, hold on. Yes. So Mike said beforehand, and CJ did a great highlight video that's on our social and on our YouTube of the bell ringing. Mike said beforehand that he was going to Eurostep and hit the bell. I said, like, the whole thing was a blur. I didn't see it. CJ assured me that he Eurostepped. I don't know. When I watch the video, I don't see a Eurostep. Did you see a Eurostep, AU? And of course, I think we have to watch the video here.
Yeah, live, I did not note the Eurostepping. I did hear Mike claim as such on the podcast. I would have to see the tape again. I'd have to analyze it a little more closely.
Here we go.
Yeah, maybe like a B-ball Paul version of a Eurostep. Like I don't know.
Oh, there is a Eurostep there. Actually,
as like an Embiid Euro, but it's yeah, not bad.
Yeah,
I didn't actually, get to claim that.
Now that I see it. There is a Euro step there. He did do it.
A mix of a crab walk and a Euro step. But yeah. He doesn't have much mobility when the target's so close to him, of course.
And shout out to Dan, who is the bell guy, who is a Ricky guy, who you see standing behind, who gave us the countdown. Dan has been a Ricky guy for a very long time. And when we were walking back with Mike, and thank you, by the way, thank you to the Sixers. Thank you to Daryl, who I believe pushed it through, but everybody else, you know, Rob and Mike and Rob, Mike, trying to think who else helped out. Whoever else helped out, thank you as well. Everybody was really, really cool, and thank you for allowing us to do it. Didn't put it on TV. Also, Mike was not on the screen, I found out, at any point, which we talked about afterwards, which is very funny, but I had nothing to do with that.
The only other thing I wanted to say about the bell ring is I saw one or two comments that said that you guys got booed.
I heard it, by the way.
Did you? Really?
Did you not hear it?
I mean, maybe because I was going nuts in our own section. I took a video. You can hear my reaction to it in real time. I didn't. I would describe the general tenor of the crowd as like confused disinterest.
Yes.
I would say like most of them probably were just still milling around and not really paying attention to what you guys were doing. I think it would have been great if you guys got booed. I think that's fantastic content. I did not hear much in the way of booing or cheering for that matter. I think it was just a fairly muted response, but perhaps other people heard differently.
I also want to add, there were so many Knicks fans there.
Yes. True. So I think there could have been booing there for that too. Yeah. You can see me in the video where they introduce me and I point up to like is because that was where I heard the booing coming from. Okay. So I thought it was funny. I heard cheers and boos, but mostly muted sort of like a murmur or whatever. So incredible, but a great, but yeah, we got some YouTube comments from the YouTube
real
video.
Quick before we get into that, just because we're talking about them not showing you on the air, is that like kind of the equivalent of NBC Sports not saying the name, like NBC Sports not saying the name that they didn't even show you guys at all? Is that list?
Well, but I don't know whose idea that was to not show us. So I think we'll have to get to the bottom of that, like why we weren't shown on TV, whether that was a Sixers directive. If so, we're going to have to ring the bell again and get on TV.
That's very fair.
Kate, Tom mentions in the Twitch chat, Tom, who was there at Stateside, Kate never mentioned it on the broadcast.
Not great.
Huh.
Might be grounds for something there.
Yeah. Yeah, they let us ring the bell, but it was sort of like the kids' table ringing the bell. So
something more to shoot for, I guess.
We got this at 833 Lickface.
Yo, Mike got no screen time with that bell ringing ceremony. What's up? It was all Spike. That's bullshit. Come on, where's my man Mike? Also, you know, CJ should have been out there too. It was like behind the bell or something. I don't know. Anyways, congrats, guys.
We did get a YouTube comment. We got a few of them. One from Biggie545. Why is CJ dressed like a Super Mario brother? CJ, any comment? CJ was wearing overalls.
Yeah, I thought this was funny how much steam it picked up. It's like by far the most liked comment on whatever video this was.
Oh, yeah, 31 likes.
Yeah, I didn't think about it too much. Abby just started drawing me with overalls on after I wore them one pod. And so then I kind of just looked at it like it's my rookie uniform.
Mm.
And yeah, I guess a Super Mario brother would be wearing them as well. But no other correlation.
And thanks to S. Duffner on YouTube, Mike had mentioned, Mike, not from here or Philly guy, but Mike had mentioned that he was wearing a heavy slime shirt, which I corrected him. And I said it was Grimm. It actually wasn't Grimm. It was Keith Warren Greenman, who is does a lot of art, sent us a bunch of t-shirts, is part of the Fairmount House, which does a bunch of local Philly art stuff. So Keith had mentioned wanting to do a Ricky shirt at some point, which we will, of course, do with him as well. We obviously our artists are great, but we do venture out every now and again. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, AU. Thank you, Stateside. Thank you to everyone who came. It was quite a moment. It did feel like that record. It felt cooler than I thought it was going to feel. Let's put it that way. So awesome. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Two pieces of good news, Big Barker related. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, bigbarker.com/Ricky. First of all, Kirby, the dog we were fostering, who was sleeping on our extra Big Barker, did get adopted, does have a forever home, was adopted by a guy named Kirby. Kirby adopted Kirby. His friend sent him the dog on a Facebook post. He drove almost an hour to get to the shelter and adopted Kirby, and they're both named Kirby. And I was asking my wife works at the shelter. She was like, I asked them how they're going to know who's who when they call him in the house. And the guy said that he's going to call the dog Kirby Puckett, which was like a meant for my own heart because of how I said to Val, I was like, do you even know who Kirby Puckett is? And she's like, baseball player? I was like, yeah, baseball player. So anyway, so Kirby is adopted. Second great Big Barker thing. Now, Rebel has been sleeping on a Big Barker ever since we became partners with Big Barker. And I think that's probably 6 years, something around there. I'll go and I'll look maybe. So Rebel is about to turn 10 years old in April. Just had his annual checkup. He's doing great. But the one thing that I have to note that my wife said as she left the appointment was they said, hey, no signs of arthritis. Dude, that is amazing to me. And the first thing I said to her is that's because Rebel sleeps on a Big Barker. And Rebel is very active, jumps off our bed, which is a high bed, every day. You can hear it from downstairs like a thud. He is almost 10 years old, no signs of arthritis. Is there a one-to-one thing here? I don't know. A lot of arthritis is luck, not luck. But a lot of it can be helped by having your dog sleep on a Big Barker. Big Barker is engineered by experts to keep your dog healthier. PenVet did a study and showed that it actually does that with improvements in joint function, reduction in pain severity, all that kind of stuff. You can tell the difference when you look at a Big Barker as opposed to a dog bed that you pick up in a pet store, in that they don't sink on a Big Barker because it's a real mattress. I've said this a million times, but it's true. If you slept on a bad mattress every night, you would feel terrible. And as you got older, those things would compound. Dogs sleep a lot. Getting your dog a proper mattress is important. Big Barker has beds for dogs of any size, from the Barker Jr. all the way to up to the extra large, for any room, every different color, every different spot in your house. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. You get the Big Barker dog bed with the processed pup patches, and your dog can stay healthy like Rebel has. A 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they're replaced for free. A 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, they will give you a full refund and even pay for the shipping. It's handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. There we go. So congratulations to Andrew Unterberger, who became part of the Ricky in 2018. After you left the 700 level, is that who you're writing
right,
for?
Yeah. I was trying to explain to Dan Olinger, and he had no frame of reference for the 700 level at all. That's how much older I am than him.
Was he even alive when the 700 level?
Very good question.
So by the way, Dan Olinger is a barrel of fucking energy, that fucking kid. It was great to see him. He came out to the live pod after the bell ring, barrel of energy. But AU has been with us since 2018. And we announced last week that AU officially is editor-in-chief of the Ricky website. Now, we were joking, what does that mean? But one of the coolest things I think about the Ricky is that it actually does mean something. We have several people who write for the site. And by the way, you can subscribe now at the site so you can get everything emailed to you. Everything is on Substack now. We don't charge anything. But if you go to writes2rickysanchez.com and just hit subscribe, you can get AU's writing emailed directly to you. Mike O'Connor's writing emailed directly to you. Dan Olinger emailed Zoe, emailed directly to you. And when me and Mike write every other week, that goes emailed directly to you too. I think this is important because social media is becoming... One, a lot of times you go on social media and people are telling you to go fuck yourself because of AJ Brown, which happens a lot. So you want to avoid it. But B, it's becoming less and less reliable to like know that you're going to see a link or something like that. So getting them emailed to you is important. But we have all these writers and we have this website that's actually busy. And I've been doing like a very half-assed job over the last several years of keeping it sort of updated and editing, and I'm not really a writer. I'm an idea person, but I'm not a writer person. So AU, as who I have said is the truest member of the Ricky, because you have the truest emotional center of the Ricky and also a great writer and actually a professional writer, you write for Billboard outside of this, is now editor-in-chief. So he will basically, like, you know, the guys will go to him and he will look through it. He will give them ideas, those sorts of things. So I'm very proud, AU, to have you as like a larger part of the Ricky empire.
Well, thank you so much. And I couldn't be prouder to be a part of it and a bigger part of it. And a lot of people reached out and said some really nice things. And I was extremely grateful for that. The funniest one, I think, came from a friend of the podcast, Seamus Clancy, who asked me, like, Does this mean you don't work at Billboard anymore? Seamus, homie,
was that a real question?
That was a real question. Like, yeah. I don't know what you think this is, but it is not that. But it is something. It is something real. We neither of us know exactly what that is yet, but hopefully we're going to find out. And you've talked a lot about how we have like the best staff in the game, which is sort of a weird thing to say about a place that isn't even really a writing publication, but we do. I mean, Dan Olinger is off to a phenomenal start. I don't think anybody does analysis or, you know, scouting stuff better than he does. Nobody does like state of the team stuff better than MOC and state of the league stuff better than MOC. So was one of the smartest writers that exists right now. And you and Mike are both really good. And we got fucking Zoe and Abby basically coming off the bench. Like it's an incredible roster. And all I really wanted to do was work more with all you guys, as an editor and as like someone who has like ideas about how our site can be expanded and developed. And I hope to be doing some of that. And I just hope to get to work more with everybody. And especially now that we have the Substack, like let's make it a real thing and let's see how good it can be. I'm both in awe of and slightly terrified by how legit this is all getting, but I think it's mostly a good thing. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. And I'm excited to keep a sort of like a family legacy alive because my dad used to be, he was the editor in chief of the sports section when he went to Penn undergrad. I think there are times in my life where if you had told him that I would be the editor-in-chief of any sized sports publication, he would be in rather large disbelief because like up until college, I was, or at least for like middle school and high school, I was very much like, oh, you know, sports are for jocks. I read Pitchfork, like that kind of person. I've obviously come around to it and I've come around to writing and editing about it. And being part of the Ricky is a really tremendous thing. And being part of it in this capacity is just awesome. I think he would be tickled by it. And my mom certainly is tickled by it. And I'm very excited about what we get to do from here.
Yeah. And you said it, and I truly do believe it. I do believe we have the best Sixers content overall in existence with the combination of the pod and all the writers. Like, I don't think we are beat by anybody. I do think we have, that is not a slight on anybody. We're the only podcast, of course, which is part of it. But from a writing perspective, that's not a slight on anyone else. I think it is an elevation of who we have and what we do. And I think the mix is actually very specific and particular. And it shows like different points of view, but it also shows an institutional knowledge and feeling that I'm not sure anybody else can measure up to. And I like to think that just the sort of freedom to go in whatever direction you want and write from the heart gives us the advantage over others. Whereas like there are some things that would get written on our site and on our Substack that would never make it on a quote unquote real bigger publication. But I think that's bad for them and good for us, because I think it gives us a connection to people that those other platforms don't have.
Yeah, I mean, we can kind of play it both ways. We can do the for real analysis, and we can tell you how and why things are the way they are. But we can also be weirdo, insane fanboys, and let me write about why B-Ball Paul is perfect for 2,500 words or whatever. And yeah, it's the kind of writing that you don't see very much on the internet anymore, especially not in like an official capacity like this.
It's very like blog era internet.
It's sort of keeping the spirit of the free Darko era alive. I don't get to do it much at all in my other job, so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to get to do it for the Ricky. And obviously the institution of the Ricky has meant so much to so many people for the last 11 years, and I do genuinely believe you guys are still getting better at it, you and Mike. I'm perpetually just so impressed by how the world just keeps getting bigger. That shouldn't be possible this late in the game. We should sort of be out of new things at this point. Partly it's because the team keeps lobbing us these softballs to knock out of the park, but it's also just because you guys are so good at what you do and so in tune with one another and with the larger culture, and it gives us all an opportunity to shine, and that's a great thing.
Thank you. Well, like I said, go to writesrickysanchez.com, subscribe there. I do genuinely, it's funny, like Substack's been around for a while, but it wasn't until we actually made the move that I actually started thinking about what the advantage was to a Ricky community person, like somebody who likes our content, in that the only way that you would know that there was something new is if you are checking social all the time. And that sucks. Like, nobody wants to have to do that. So to just get it in your email box whenever it happens is this huge advantage. We've added more subscribers in the last 2 weeks since starting Substack than we've added in the last 2 years, which I think says a lot. So we're really happy. Everyone at Substack has been great in helping us with that. But very proud to have you, AU. Do think we have the best staff in the city. Very, very funny that Seamus thought that you were quitting your real job to do it.
So. And the entire thing is still funny. Like people like congratulating me on the editor in chief thing, talking about like, oh, this is such a big deal. I'm like, I guess it is. But like, there's no precedent for this. Certainly in my career, I think in most people's careers. So we're still learning a little bit as we go here. But I'm excited for what comes next.
Can we do just one or two voicemails and an email? Is that cool? Yeah, all right. 833 Lickface. Where is the right Tobias voicemail that I wanted? Hold on. I think it's this one. 833 Lickface.
Oh, again, I have to call back because fucking Toby is so bad at passing that they had to dust the tomb off, who's only there for emergencies, to throw an inbound pass. This is ridiculous. He sucks. I hate him. Bye.
And then, wait, I think was this the
Taylor again. I have to call back because fucking Toby.
Wait, hold on. That's the one I just played. Hang on. Where's the other one? Oh, there we go.
Hey, guys. I know past the trade deadline, but I'm just, for some reason, it hit me today, and I'm amazed that Tobias is still on the team, and he stayed through his whole contract. Basically, Tobias was too valuable to us that we couldn't trade him for nothing, but his contract was so crappy we couldn't trade him for anything. Is there any player ever that had those two things be true? Wild. And the question I always ask, what contract would you bring him back on? What contract would Toby be a Sixer again? And you would be thrilled.
All right, first of all, Toby's not coming back. And the other thing that Mike kept saying that I actually don't believe, he knows I don't believe it, I actually don't believe that he's too valuable to trade. I think he barely provides value, to be quite honest with you. I actually think the problem was the contract and couldn't get, they just couldn't get a body, like an expiring body that plays the same position. I think that's the biggest issue. But if Batum was 29 or something, they would have traded him for an injured expiring contract, I think, at some point.
And Batum had like a pretty similar thing himself when he was in Charlotte. Remember, he signed that like gargantuan 5-year deal. And he was there, I think, maybe not for all 5 years, but at least for like 4 of them. And it was the same sort of thing where like, yeah, he's good. You don't necessarily want to trade him for nothing, but the contract is ridiculous. And he was probably better than Toby's been for us. I will ask people to remember that a stretch of Tobias this bad does mean we are getting a stretch of Tobias that's going to be pretty good at some point.
Yeah.
You know, exact location and time TBD, but it's coming. So just hold on and hope that we catch it at the right time and it can actually help us win some games, because he is certainly helping us go the other direction currently.
You know who I always put Batum with for some reason in my brain? Do you remember Aaron Aflalo?
Of course, yeah.
For some reason, Nick Batum and Aaron Aflalo were always like in the same group to my, like, I don't even remember watching Aaron Aflalo. I just remember his name. And for some reason, I had Batum and Aflalo in the same headspace. This comes from Tommy, writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. Apologies if I've shared this before, but the Pat Bev news got me thinking about how we now view players on the Sixers that we might not have liked or wanted. Horford, Harden, etc. I've realized that the attitude we take is the same we'd act when a friend or loved one is dating someone who we don't like. Before they start dating / early on, you might express doubts that the partner is not a good match for your friend. Once they're together, however, you realize they are here to stay and will be a big part of your friend's life and your life, so you start looking for the good in them and start trying to be positive. Once they're gone, you shit talk them and can truthfully say you never liked them in the first place, despite having said nice things before. Exact logic can be applied to Horford, Harden, and for me, Beverly, who is better than I thought / think, is still a lot more talk than actually tough. So what do you think of the metaphor?
I guess I'm kind of out on like, oh, this is like when you're dating a girl and it's blah, blah, blah. When your buddy's dating a girl and it's blah, blah. I don't know. Those kind of emails don't necessarily do it for me anymore. But I guess, yeah, sure. Close enough.
Wow, what a destruction of Tommy. Maybe you there.
Sorry, Tommy.
You wrote from the heart.
I'm sure your friends have very nice girlfriends, but I'm not particularly interested in this discussion.
833 Lick Faces, the voicemail.
Hey, Spike, Mike, CJ, team. Love you guys. This is Kyle from Central PA. Spike, on the live pod, when you said it's over the next day after winning one, man, I can't believe you could be any more wrong. If I'm having a bad day, I pull up the Philly special on YouTube and suddenly I'm having a better day. You say Utley, Rollins, Howard, Matt Stairs, Brett Myers getting a 12 pitch at bat in the World Series. Man, if we win one with Joe, it is going to be forever and we're going to have those memories. And Mike's right. They have to win one. Have to. Love you guys. Thanks, Daryl, for letting him do the bell. They have to win one.
Everyone's sort of coming to the conclusion that we're sort of on the tail end of this or whatever. Mm. What was your thought about? So what I had said in the live pod was, you know, championships aren't that great anyway. They're just over the next day. It's about more about like the journey it is and the anticipation of winning and maybe winning than it is about winning. What is your thought on all of that?
Well, my biggest thought was that it was a bold decision for you to say this, like at a live event where like everything was going well and people were having a good time, and you just kind of dropped this like a bomb in the middle of the bar.
I don't care if they win.
I don't know how you thought it was going to go over, but I could have told you how it was going to go over. But that being said, I understand what you. I don't necessarily 100% agree, but I also do understand what you generally mean, and I think you can sort of sum it up by saying that. Like losing is torture and winning is relief, at least when you're with a team that that's been through this as long as we have. And you're more just like, oh, please don't let me feel the way that I felt all these other times. Then it's like, man, wouldn't it be swell if they just won once? Like, it's just not like that. It's too deep. It's too complicated. And so, yeah, when I remember when it looked like they were going to pull away in game 6 last year, I wasn't like running around the room like high-fiving nobody and just like kind of feeling myself. I was more just like, oh my, like finally, like I can breathe a little bit. Like maybe this will finally be a time where I don't have to hate myself at the end of this series. And I don't have to hate being a Sixers fan and a sports fan and all this other stuff. Maybe we can finally be spared all of this misery. That's not the same thing as joy. And I think you can get the joy. I think the Phillies run last year, the 2 years ago, I'm sorry, at this point.
The bigger surprise Phillies run, the first one. Yeah.
That was absolutely joy. I would say maybe even the Eagles Super Bowl run 2 seasons ago, that was pretty joyful too. We're sort of past the point of joy, I think, at this point, unless we just like fucking plowed through the playoffs, you know, do the kind of fo-fo-fo thing, which is not going to happen even in the best case scenario. So I do think that's sort of where we are, where winning is never going to feel as good as losing feels bad, just because losing, we've got the scar tissue already from losing. Every time just digs it a little deeper. I don't know. That's a mixed metaphor, but you know what I mean. It's harder to feel the equivalent emotions winning and losing at this point.
Well, and by the way, the Eagles Super Bowl in 18 had some of that carefree thing to it after Wentz got hurt, and it was just Foles. And then there was this weird thing, you know, after the interception in the pick six in the NFC Championship game, where you just knew they were going to win, like, and you knew they were going to win the Super Bowl. I've never felt like so confident in my life about a game that our team was an underdog.
The NFC Championship was certainly joy in a way that I don't ever remember feeling as a Philly sports fan before.
I think though, so, you know, some of what I said is a little bit of hyperbole, but only a little bit. Because what the caller did, and I understand your point, was, hey, look, what I'm feeling bad about, blah, 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 I just go and I look at these great moments. But like, that's sort of a straw man in that there's a lot of great moments I can pull up that are not from championships that I feel good when I watch. By the way, Philadelphia is full of these moments where the two of the most particular ones, one being step over, you know, and beating the Lakers in that game, which we treat as if Iverson won a championship. And then the 93 Phillies are another moment that I think people look back on as positives. And I think, I guess my point is that obviously I would like if they won a championship, it would be nice. Mostly, this sounds like I'm not being overly like selfless here or whatever, but mostly because I want everybody to feel it. Like I think it would be so nice for everybody. I would be happy, but I think the joy that everyone in the community would feel would actually uplift how I felt even more. That said, if they never win a championship, I will look back at this era positively with a billion different moments, both Sixers and podcast oriented, that I will smile when I think about and feel. Maybe is it as good as the Philly special? Maybe not, but it's also more personal to me in a way that the Philly special will never be. So it's not that I don't want them to win a championship. I don't actually not care, but I do not feel like this time is wasted if they don't, because then all of sports is a waste, because most of the time they're not going to win the championship.
Yeah, it's a really frustrating thing about sort of the way a lot of discourse is geared now around like saying, oh, well, what if they ever won? And the only thing that ends that conversation is a championship. You could win MVPs, you could win conference titles, division titles, whatever, but nothing quote unquote matters except for that actual championship. And this is the thing that you guys were arguing with Daryl about. It's the same conversation. It's yes, it matters getting to the conference finals. Yes, it matters getting to the finals, even if it doesn't result in the championship, because that's the chance for more of those memories that you're talking about. That's a chance for more of those truly joyful moments. And that's the chance to feel that community with one another. And does a championship, I mean, that sort of validates, I think the main thing that a championship does is that it validates all the moments that led up to it.
Yes.
And that, because sure, there's so many, we've had some great series moments, stuff like Joel hitting the buzzer beater against the Raptors, or the Joel windmill dunk against the Raptors in a different year, or him coming back against the Heat, like really, really great moments that made us feel so great in the moment. And we're instantly poisoned when the series ended the way they did.
Right.
So to have a playoff run that doesn't end that way, and that we don't have to look back and go like, yeah, well, that was a nice moment, but we all know what happened next. And to actually be able to say like, yeah, like all of that led up to the main thing, a championship. That's the joy that I'll take from it is, okay, this season was great and it was great the entire way through. And we don't have to look back on it with that lens of, oh yeah, but only if.
For sure. I was just thinking the other, I really like David Bowie, who is British.
Man, you're really stretching for that one. Okay, yeah, let's hear it.
It's not a stretch. I'm just saying I really like David Bowie.
David Bowie is British. Okay, let's go with that.
Okay. Well, Mike will be back.
I thought that this was going to be like an extended metaphor about the David Bowie catalog. You're just mentioning it because he's a British person that you like?
Yeah, and you said that I don't like British rock bands, and it seems crazy to me. I like Black Sabbath, you know, British, you know, so on and so forth. Lost Prophets, though that got a little weird. Sorry for that, yeah.
Scottish, too, not really the same thing. I mean, technically.
They're not Scottish.
Aren't they Scottish? I thought they were Scottish or Welsh or something.
Maybe they're Welsh. But Welsh is close enough to British. Scottish, sure. Not. Yeah. All right. As I mentioned, you can subscribe to AU at rates, RickySanchez.com. Follow him on X at AU. Get off my gold. And of course, where you can find his billboard writing as well. AU, thank you, sir, for joining us, for sitting in for Mike. Mike will be back our next pod. I think our next pod is Wednesday. Next pod is Wednesday. Mike was actually flying during this, returning back. Oh, just to clear up one thing, the bar mitzvah was not a lie. The bar mitzvah actually happened. People thought we lied about the bar mitzvah. The bar mitzvah is why we picked this game. The Sixers were nice enough to give us an option of a few different games. Mike was going to come back at this time anyway, so it lined up well. But the bar mitzvah really happened. Mike really does have a nephew that had a bar mitzvah. That I'm sure that happens every other week with him, but that did happen. So thanks for sitting in, AU.
Yeah, of course. What would you guys have had to gain by lying about Mike being in for a bar mitzvah?
Well, no, because it gave us a reason to say why the stateside thing was happening.
Okay.
So, like, the reason that we said we were doing the pod was because we wanted to publicize the stateside thing without talking about the bell.
Okay, yes.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right. We'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know, look this.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking get you!
Time for plan B.